Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Today we have for you a brand new episode just come out from under the 60-day embargo period during which our participating newspapers have exclusive rights. Thanks for downloading, and I hope you enjoy the show. This story was first published on November 17th of 2024 under the headline Uncle Sam's Camels Never Quite Caught On in the West. Here we go. In the early 1980s, on Stark Street in southeast Portland, there was an aging Hudson Oil Company gas station that never seemed to get much business. It had an appearance reminiscent of a Kmart store about 3 years ago, like a neglected outpost of a once huge nationwide business that was slowly fading away. And that was, in fact, the case. Hudson Oil Company, at its peak in the 1950s and 60s, had about 300 gas stations in 36 states, plus an oil refinery. It was owned and managed by an oil tycoon named Mary Hudson, a remarkable woman who founded the business in 1933 when she was just 21 years old. She launched it by borrowing $200 from her father and using it to open a gas station in Kansas City. At her peak, Hudson was one of only three women on the Forbes 400 list of the richest people in the United States. At her downfall in 1982, she was convicted of felony theft for tweaking her gas company's gas pumps to shortchange customers in a desperate move made to try to stave off bankruptcy after her company got caught unprepared for a sudden glut on the oil market, the crude oil market. But probably the most interesting thing about the Stark Street Hudson station was the giant wall mural on its side. The left side of the mural showed two big Arabian camels with pack saddles on them towering over a minor 49er-type guy pitching a little pup tent camp. The right side was taken up with a huge, colorful map of the U.S. with the words 36 states printed over the top of it. "First it was camels in the West," reads the type over the picture. "Now Hudson serves you best." As advertising, this mural was a bit of a mixed bag. It did attract attention, but mostly it seemed like it was the wrong kind. Most people who looked at it probably wondered how a company could have gotten big enough to be in 36 states without learning what kind of animals cowboys and minor 49ers used. Mules, yes. Horses, sure. Camels? Well, as it turns out, camels did have a role to play in the American West. They started out strong and hopes were high that they would be a great addition to frontier transportation infrastructure, but their number one booster then disgraced himself by doing something super illegal, and the camels kind of fell out of favor in the West and faded away. Come to think of it, maybe it's not such a bad analogy for Hudson Oil Company after all. The idea of using camels in the desert country of the American Southwest was an old one, of course. You can't really cross a desert without thinking of camels, and large swaths of the old Southwest were desert lands. An army major named George Crossman proposed the idea in 1837, but it went nowhere at the time. Then the Mexican-American War broke out, and when it ended in 1848, a whole bunch of desert and desert-ish lands came into the American fold. One of the army guys tasked with patrolling the new territory, Major Henry Wayne, got very interested in the possibilities of camels as cavalry mounts. He reached out to a close personal friend who happened to be a U.S. senator from Mississippi and pitched him on an ambitious plan to import hundreds of camels for the United States Army. Wayne's politician friend also got very excited about the idea. He introduced bills in Congress in 1851 and again in 1852. Both times the bills were literally laughed out of committee. But the senator was nothing if not persistent, as you'll know if you've guessed his identity. His name was Jefferson Davis, and you surely will recognize that name either as the main villain of the American Civil War or the main villain of the Dukes of Hazzard, Jefferson Davis, Boss Hogg. Davis, kept trying throughout the 1850s to get Congress to go for his camel importation scheme, but nothing happened until 1854, when he was appointed Secretary of War by President Franklin Pierce. Promptly, Secretary Davis, got a $30,000 appropriation to outfit an expedition of Army officers to travel to the Near East and buy a large and eclectic assortment of different breeds and types of camels. The Army found the camels to be really great as beasts of burden, especially for crossing long stretches of dry country. They could carry 2 to 4 times as much weight as a mule could take on, and of course could travel much farther between water sources. But they quickly found that they were absolutely awful for any actual military use. Soldiers hated working with them. In close formation, they often smelled atrocious, and their aroma actually frightened horses. Also, training a camel to do military stuff could be tricky. Camels chewed a cud, which they could spit with considerable force and accuracy. Many a soldier trying to discipline a camel or just doing something nearby that alarmed the beast found himself covered in gelatinous, putrid goo. This, and the camel's ability to defecate without any warning whatsoever to anyone standing in their rear, such as the lifting of a tail as horses and mules do, quickly overrode whatever lovable or useful qualities they may have possessed, writes military historian John Shepard. But as pack animals, they really were a marvel. The largest camels could carry 1,500 pounds of freight, which is more than many modern pickup trucks can haul. Unfortunately for the camels, just as their load-hauling capacities were starting to be appreciated, the Civil War broke out. The things the camels were good at were tasks that were no longer priorities for the Army now that there was a shooting war on. And also, folks were acutely aware that the camels had been Confederate President Jefferson Davis's pet project. There was another public relations issue that the camels had, too. It wasn't any fault of their own, either. In the few years before the Civil War, a number of Southern civilian shippers had started importing camels from Africa, or claiming to. Lots of ships set out for Africa and returned with a heavy load, and yet nobody ever seemed to actually see any of the camels that they were bringing back in such apparently great numbers. There was, and still is, plenty of reason to believe these shippers were actually smuggling slaves on those ships. The transatlantic slave trade had been outlawed years earlier, although slavery was still legal. Ordinarily, slave ships could be identified by their large water tanks and by their awful smell, both of which were easily explained by a cargo of camels. So the idea was they would set up half a dozen or so camels on the deck of the ship as window dressing and stuff the cargo hold below with humans. There were and are people who wonder if this was the real secret reason for future Confederate President Jefferson Davis's enthusiasm for the camel importation scheme. In any case, it all added up to a pretty bad taste in the mouths of Union policymakers. So in 1864, the camels were all auctioned off. Several circuses bought camels from the Army, and about 80 ranchers in the Southwest bought one or two as well. Others were just turned loose to shift as best they might in the wild, and for a while there was a population of wild camels roaming around Arizona. There's an especially interesting legend around a camel known as the Red Ghost, which supposedly had a saddle on it with a decomposing corpse tied to it. Apparently a rider who suffered injuries that made it hard to stay in the saddle, which is something I am told is a serious issue for camel riders, and he apparently tied himself in place in the vain hope that the camel would carry him to safety. That story's a bit off topic for us, but it's well worth looking up. In Oregon, a few of the surplus camels ended up on pack trains running supplies into remote mining camps. There are references in newspaper articles to camels being used on the Umatilla to Boise run in the 1860s and from Walla Walla to the Kootenay Mining District. Also, there were 2 camels on the steamship Brother Jonathan when it struck a hidden reef and sank while steaming to Portland in 1865. The doomed camels had been headed for the mining operations in the Owyhee area of southeast Oregon. Pack train operators seem to have really appreciated the brawny beasts. But within a few years, railroads had been built that pretty much eliminated the need for the far-traveling beasts of burden in the backcountry, and the camels' higher maintenance requirements compared with mules or horses just made them more trouble than most operators felt they were worth. So, like the Hudson Oil Company a century later, they just kind of faded from the scene, leaving only memories of scenes of picturesque incongruousness in the minds of folks who had been lucky enough to see one from a distance, and less pleasant memories in the minds of those unlucky enough to be standing directly behind one when nature called. Key sources in this story included works by T.C. Eliot, John Shepard, Vince Hawkins, and the Army Historical Foundation. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. I do hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Check out our hub page at offbeatoregon.com to explore all the other things we do or to find the full citations and visuals that go with today's show. And if you haven't already, check out our Offbeat Oregon books, basically revised, updated, re-researched collections of these columns and podcasts arranged by topic. So we've got Heroes and Rascals of Old Oregon, Love, Sex, and Murder in Old Oregon, and Bad Ideas and Horrible People of Old Oregon out and about. And I'm working on a fourth title now. Also, just wanted to give a quick shout out about my other podcast, which is a weekly podcast called the Penny Dreadful Reading Hour. So if you like listening to me talk and you like Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street, and Varney the Vampire, and other similar, you know, scurrilous literature, you might enjoy it. Check it out. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts with a search for Penny Dreadful Story Hour. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license, version 4.0 International. Her theme music is by the Atlas String Band out of Seattle, up in the Washington Territory, and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon come out once per weekday, usually around 6 a.m., and so it won't be long before the next episode is on your device and ready for you to queue up. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day and the weekend with good stuff. Bye now.